Hi everyone, Marty Becker here, owner of Atlas Financial Strategies in St. Louis, Missouri, coming to you with episode number 36 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. In this episode, I want to talk to you about staying too long at the party. Now, in my 20s, I was notorious for this, of staying way too long either at the bar or the St. Patrick's Day Festival, or the nightclub. And it's one of those things, you get to a point to where there's going to be nothing but diminishing returns on the fun you've already had at that party if you continue to stay. Now, a good example of this is a couple weeks ago, we were at the lake with some friends, and my wife, God love her, was hanging out with some of her girlfriends. There were some cocktails, having a good time. And then eventually we got to the point to where I was watching her. She was walking into the water to go get one of our boys. And I kind of noticed she was starting to stumble a little bit. And to the point to where I was making fun of her and tapping some of the other guys saying, hey, watch this out here. Now, does that mean she's a raging alcoholic? No. It means we stayed at the party too long. And just because the party was going to continue to go for the rest of the day and into the night doesn't mean that we were going to get any other benefit from staying there any longer. Not to mention, she's about 103 pounds and it was like 100 degrees out that day. We stayed too long at the party. It was time to go. There was no more benefit sticking around. And I see a lot of people doing that in the stock market today. Okay. There's still a lot of people at this party, and they should really consider leaving. But you have all the morons on CNBC and all the advisors blocking the door on the way out saying, hey, why do you want to leave? This thing's just getting started. And the answer is because I've been here for a long time. And just because it's not planning to end anytime soon doesn't mean it's not going to. It's time to go. Now, I'm not securities licensed, so please don't take this as any advice to buy or sell any type of security. But what we're going to be looking at today is a newsletter from a guy by the name of Paul Dietrich, who is the chief investment strategist for B. Riley Wealth Advisors. Now, I think this newsletter used to be a subscription status, and now I think he's just putting it out for free. So all you got to do is Google Paul Dietrich, and it'll pop up. You'll be able to find this monthly newsletter. And it's super, super informative. And Paul seems to be one of those honest advisors who has actually gotten his clients out of the market, even though there's no benefit for him in doing that, but to help his clients prevent something catastrophic from happening to their portfolio. So let's go ahead and get into this. I'm going to share my screen with you here. Okay, so here we go. This is the latest newsletter from Paul Dietrich, and it's actually labeled, think you're a smarter investor than Warren Buffett? So he starts out here, a research paper published earlier this month by JP Morgan Chase argued that large numbers of average Main Street investors have aggressively crowded into positions based on improbable expectations of earnings growth. Such hyperbolic moves in price and sentiment, the bank's researchers concluded, are more often violently corrected than not when the exuberance runs its course. Violently corrected. That doesn't sound good. So how do we know that the stock market is overvalued? Forget about analyzing the stock market, he says. All you have to do is look at the world's most famous and greatest investors and just see what they're doing. He gives some examples. What do Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Jamie Dimon, the Walton family, and Warren Buffett know that we don't? This year alone, Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world, from the last time I checked, sold about $13.5 billion in Amazon stock. And Mark Zuckerberg's net sales of Meta platforms, with this, which is Facebook, amounted to almost $1 billion. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, sold $183 million of his JP Morgan stock. The Walton family of Walmart just sold $4.5 billion of their Walmart stock. Bill Gates has also been selling billions of dollars in Microsoft stock. Warren Buffett, this is a big one, Warren Buffett has sold stock and created $198 billion in a cash hoard because he expects a possible recession and a significant stock market correction. These investors do not think their companies are bad investments. They merely believe the stock market is currently valuing them far above their worth. Dietrich goes on. Other corporations are following Buffett's example. U.S. corporations now hold $4.4 trillion in cash, an all-time high. Other institutional investors are also heading for the hills. Total assets in money market funds have recently hit a record $6 trillion, increasing by $1.2 trillion over the past year and nearly doubling over the past 5 years. That is a lot of money just sitting on the sidelines. What do these guys know? So why are the average investors still piling into the stock market, chasing the AI boom and other tech stocks when many of the founders of these companies are selling out? Does that make any sense? Dietrich asks, are the average investors smarter than Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg, the Walton family, and Warren Buffett? And the answer is no, and neither are their advisors. Dietrich goes on, remember the advice your grandmother gave you as a child. Buy low and sell high. Don't do the opposite. That's what everybody says they're going to do, but nobody actually does it. Here's why the market is overvalued. Right before the beginning of almost all recessions, there is a run-up, and sometimes a dramatic run-up just before it crashes. So we are in one of those run-ups now. When will the stock market run-up end? No one knows, but what goes up eventually goes down, and when it goes down, it can be rapid and a steep decline. Let me just show you a chart here because he brings up, remember the dot-com and internet hysteria in 2000 and the mortgage-backed securities euphoria in 2008. That turned very quickly. The S&P 500 from peak to bottom lost about 49% of its value. Then it started creeping back up. Then we had 2008 and it crashed all over again. If you look at this chart, no one made any gains for 13 years. Now, if you were one of these smart investors who got out in early 2000 and went back in 2004, got back out in 2007, you made a lot of money. The average investor and the average advisor does not do that. So nobody made any gains for 13 years. This is why it's so important to have guaranteed income to make sure your foundation of needs is completely set, because you can ride this kind of stuff out because you don't have to pull as much out as you would need to if you were totally relying on an investment portfolio. I digress. So since the markets cannot go up forever, they will eventually revert to their stock market mean. Here is an update on various ways to measure whether the stock market is overvalued or undervalued. The first way is something called price-earnings ratio, or PE ratio. This is one of the most widely used methods. One of the first things you learn in any college economics 101 course is that in the short term, the stock market can be influenced by almost anything. But in the long term, the stock market always reverts back to the long-term directional trend of the underlying economy. Keep that in mind. Corporate earnings are one of the key elements of this trend. In the last almost 30 years, including the previous three recessions, the PE ratio of the S&P 500 has never been so historically out of alignment with the S&P index market price. The next indicator is what's called the dividend yield. The current dividend yield is historically low at 1.32%. Now, since investors can get a safe short-term U.S. Treasury yield that pays anywhere from 4 to 5%, and mind you, you can also get a long-term guaranteed yield using a multi-year guaranteed annuity. You can lock rates like that in for up to 10 years if you so choose. This indicates that the stock market is wildly overvalued using the dividend yield valuation. Then there's technical indicators. The most common method compares the S&P 500 Its 200-day moving average, which is the stock market's long-term trend. If the S&P 500 is significantly above its long-term average, most investors considered it overvalued. So even compared to previous recessions, the S&P 500 index is trading above its long-term average more than at any time in the last 30 years. It's interesting to note that today, this is key, listen to this one too, it would take a stock market drop of over 12.5% for the S&P 500 to revert to its current 200-day moving average. So minimum, we're looking at, according to Dietrich, at least a 12.5% drop just to get it back to normal. There is still a strong possibility that the economy will enter a mild recession this year. If that is the case historically, the S&P 500 has dropped by an average 36% in a recession. If there is a recession, you can add the 12.5% loss from above with the 36% average drop in a recession. That means we could see a total drop of 48.5% from the current overvalued stock market. Now, Warren Buffett also has an indicator to measure if the market is overvalued or not. Buffett has been selling stock and raising cash. He now holds an all-time record of $198 billion in short-term treasuries and cash alternatives. It's a lot of money. Warren Buffett invented his own stock market indicator, commonly called the Buffett indicator. Over the years, he has said that the Buffett indicator was probably the best single measure of where stock market valuations stand at any given moment. Here's how it works. The indicator takes the 5,000 stocks in the Wilshire 5,000, which is just about every stock traded in the United States. It is divided by the latest quarterly GDP estimate. This gauge takes the total stock market capitalization, so basically how much every publicly traded company is worth, and divides that by the size of the U.S. economy. The indicator is now at its highest level in history. The indicator has historically averaged around 65%. The ratio peaked at 88.3% before the 1929 crash, and that was pretty bad. At the peak of the dot-com bubble, the ratio was 140%. At the peak of the 2008 recession, the ratio was at 105%. Currently, and this is important, currently the ratio is at 199%, its highest reading ever. So what he's saying here is that the stock market is basically doubled in value of what it should be. Another indicator is gold, which has gone up 23% over the past year. But he asked a good question here, which is, you know, these recession signals triggered well over a year and a half ago. Why haven't we had a recession yet? Dietrich goes on to say, on average, recession signals like the inverted yield curve and the leading economic indicators signal a recession 9 to 18 months in advance. We're now about 20 months after the signals were initially triggered. However, in the past, there have been recessions that have not started for as long as 28 months after recession signal. The 1969 recession began in the 24th month. He goes on to tell a story that he was actively investing clients' portfolios in the late 1990s and up until the beginning of the dot-com recessions, or what they call the dot-bombs. He goes, I remember appearing as a commentator on the Financial News Network, which is now CNBC, in the year 2000. After the conference board's leading economic indicators signaled a recession in the next 9 to 12 months, I announced that I was moving my clients into a defensive investment strategy of mainly bonds, cash, and gold. This is a real advisor here. He divested all of his clients' money, and I'm sure was getting very little benefit of it. So you have to ask yourself, if your advisor isn't doing this for you, what is the motive behind it? In my cynical nature, I'm just going to throw it out there, they can't really charge you a whole lot of management fees if there's nothing to manage if the money's sitting in cash. That's just me and my conspiracy theory. He goes on, at the time, the dot-com stock market boom was in full swing. The television anchors thought I had lost my mind when I told them I was moving my clients out of the market. But about 7 months later, the S&P 500 peaked to bottom, lost 49%. The NASDAQ lost 78%. And most of the NASDAQ stocks were delisted or just flat out went out of business. So the people who own those stocks in the companies that just were gone, they lost 100% of their money that was held in those stocks. It was a very mild recession. GDP never went below minus 1%. But the S&P 500 fell 49% and the NASDAQ fell 78%. In retrospect, many investors' retirement savings account lost so much money because of FOMO, the fear of missing out, just to participate in the stock market hysteria of that day. He goes on, we're living through the longest bull market in U.S. history. Since the last stock market bottom in a recession on March 9th, 2009, we have experienced a nearly 15-year bull market, the longest bull market in U.S. history. For those of you listening and watching, don't know, average bull market is between 5 to 6 years. So watching cable television business channels, I am always amazed at the number of investors and analysts who think this time is different. After a 15-year historic bull market, the COVID pandemic, geopolitical wars, energy and economic disruptions, spotty earnings, inflation, and Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, banking failures, commercial real estate defaults, slowing and contracting yield curves, and the leading economic indicators, what kind of evidence does one need to see that we are moving into a business cycle recession? It's basically screaming at us what it's doing. Bottom line, he says, wise investors should be very skeptical of those who tell you we are starting a new bull market and that we will not have a recession. Hey, you don't need to leave the party. It's still happening. They want you to believe that the natural business cycles of bull markets followed by a recession have been magically suspended, and this time it's different. It's not different. The next recession has been deferred because of trillions of dollars in deficit spending, but not put off forever. In summary, the U.S. government has pumped $11 trillion in stimulus money into the economy over the past 5 years. And that has had the effect of pushing off the recession. Dietrich goes on to say, I can't tell you the exact date when the stock market correction or recession will start, but it will come sooner rather than later. The economy is slowing. Retail sales are trending down. Unemployment is going up. Manufacturing and transportation have been slowing for months, and services are starting to slow. I can attest to this. One of my best friends is a contractor who builds custom-built homes. He's had more business than he knows what to do with over the past 6-7 years. He is in the process of flipping a condo, and he does great work, and he got full asking price, but the people who are trying to buy it are nitpicking everything, and he was getting ready to tell his realtor to just have them just go find something else. I don't want to deal with them. His realtor told him, you probably don't want to do that because the real estate market is slowing. And if we put this thing back on the market, you may not get asking price. So Dietrich wraps this up as at some point, the U.S. stock market will start to reflect these underlying directional trends in the economy and eventually the stock market bubble. Now, this episode was not meant to terrify people or to be some anti-stock propaganda podcast here. This is just a warning. This is what the people with the money are telling everyone in very simple language. They're not trying to hide it. There's no agenda back here from what I can tell. If you have these multi-billionaires that are putting all their money in cash, they're expecting something to happen. Okay. So now is the time to really consider protecting your money, having guaranteed income, or just protecting it from loss and getting a very healthy interest rate on a guaranteed basis for as long as you can get it. Now, I want to recommend that you go back and you listen to the last episode, episode 35, because I did a case study where that couple actually did this. They were completely out of the market, completely. All of their money was in fixed instruments and just money markets earning 4.5%, 5% right now. What we did was we set up a guaranteed lifetime income plan for them to where no matter, even if they decided to go back into the market and it crashed, even if that happened, they would still be totally okay because such a large portion of their income needs was guaranteed from the annuity. So go back, listen to episode 35. It came out really well for that couple. And if you have questions on how the Atlas annuity strategy would work for you, all you have to do is click the button in the top right corner of any page of my website to book a call, or you can go directly to atlasannuity.com and schedule a short phone call to get your questions answered. So everyone, I hope this was helpful. I really want you to think about this, contact your advisors, and get some straight answers from them. If you found this information helpful, please do us a favor, subscribe to the podcast, like the episode, share it with someone that you think maybe needs to hear it. And then again, you can always reach out to me with questions by going to atlasannuity.com and booking that short phone call. Again, this is Marty Becker coming to you with episode number 36 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast, wishing you all the best in your financial education.